thinking in a Jewish mythical way, there is a fear of not being born. We know from Heidegger and even Plato and the whole, we can say, Western philosophy, that the main fear in life is the fear of death. We are going to our death, we are running to our death, we are struggling death, we trying to deny death, different, or accept death. And but I try to suggest that starting from the Bible, there is an idea that you can be born in your body, and yet your soul is not born.
I sat in on a few of the seminars here together, which yourself and your really, really beautiful, wonderful colleagues here invited me to join. And the immense knowledge, there was a certain idea that was discussed, and there was a debate around the room of where's the first place it shows up. And one person says, oh, it's in the Isaac Luria, and begins, you know, citing from by memory some text from the Eitz Chaim. And the other said, no, it's actually in the Zohar, and begins citing just this incredible amount of knowledge, but not a knowledge that leads to pessimism or to defeatism. It's a knowledge that feels invigorated and empowered and responsible for the future of our people, of humanity. It's quite a remarkable combination.
I must admit that I got it as a heritage, continuous heritage of my teachers. Yuda and Melila and Biti and other friends and people with whom we're studying here, and also Moshe Idel and other, you know, professors and colleagues. The feeling is, maybe it's also a question of, we can speak later about gender, you know, there is assumption of kind of feminine reading and masculine reading, even though men and women can share those kinds of readings or kind of androgynous perception of text and knowledge. But for me, I don't feel that I know, although I'm studying a lot and I'm devoted to the mission. Like, I'm studying Zohar and I'm studying Kabbalah and Jewish literature for years, but I don't feel myself as someone who knows. I feel like I'm seeking, I'm a seeker, and it's more, I don't want to use, you know, big words and scary kind of expressions, but it's like Shechina medaberet migrono, the Shechina speaks through you, or when we say in prayer, Adonai sfatai tiftach ufi agiti latecha.
God, we pray to God to open up our lips so that our mouths may speak your praise.
Yes, and I think also it combines the Kabbalistic perception of the Shechina as the divine mouth and also human mouth. So the ability to say those words, it's not mine, because it's Hevel, it's like, it's nothingness that goes through us, and it also everything. But it's something which we must pray to be a vessel to hold this knowledge or process. And sometimes I feel it as you reflect on the seminars, many people have so much so many understanding and so much knowledge. And when we sit together in the Beit Midrash, the question is not who knows more or what do you know, rather how you can share it and how this inspiration can be what the Kabbalists call kind of a zivug and kind of meeting and union of souls. So it's also impregnation, talking about birth. Ideas, they impregnate each other. It starts also in philo, and we have those ideas in Greek philosophy and literature. Thoughts are impregnated in our minds. And then again, when we speak them through. So there is something about this kind also of I would say, body of knowledge, especially the Kabbalistic body of knowledge. The feeling that it's indeed an open book that continues to be written. Even though the Zohar was written in Castile at the 13th century, the feeling of studying it as a new life, giving new life to yourself and the text, holding it and nurturing it, like the Kabbalists speak about the process of Torah studying, that you can become a newborn through the study. We can speak about Rabbi Nachman, Bechinat Ibur, like a person goes through a process of impregnation and being in this covered, capsulated state of mind, and then something comes out and it goes through screaming. And also in the Zohar and in Lurianic Kabbalah, like you feel the process that the Torah gives you a new life. And it's really serious process to go through.
It's interesting. Sometimes when I'm sitting here, I think that I'm coming to interview PhDs and professors and lecturers and experts, and I am. It's true on one level, but it turns out to be more often that I'm interviewing, firstly humans who are asking real human questions and looking for human answers, and also in some sense people that are deeply committed to finding answers within these traditions. I feel like I'm interviewing mystics. I feel like I'm sometimes between the Bet Midrash, between the religious study hall and between an academic space. I wasn't expecting this, but it's really quite an incredible experience.
I have a few different associations to answer, like to resonate with your comment, because on the one hand, I'm always also afraid of being accused with this kind of accusation. You're supposed to do philological study and be a historian. And what you are actually doing is dealing with the soul and spiritual journeys. But I also insist in a way to say I'm not a historian. This is not my profession. I'm studying the literature of the Zohar and of Kabbalistic text. And in my own life, I'm devoted to it, and it influences my personality and the personalities of my students and people around me. So I feel that we are living in a blessed decade, that the borders between being academical and being serious as a scholar and being devoted and believer and seeker, and in a way also practicing, many scholars practicing different aspects of what they study. And I feel that today it's much more flexible. And we have more freedom, although it sometimes meet us in the problematic corners, but we have more freedom to hold them both and to check, because being serious scholar doesn't mean that you feel nothing to the subject matter. They believed in those assumptions in Germany and in the Hebrew University. Some people believe until today in those ideas and notions. But so it's interesting also asking you back, like, why you're not supposed to be so surprised, because you're young. And you're growing up also, you know, in a new age time. And for you, all the doors are open to study both academic studies and spiritual studies. I feel like the question, who needs until today to hold those borders?
Right. What kind of insecurities are they holding onto? I appreciate that you turned the question back on me. But I'd like to actually have a quick look at, you brought some show and tell here for us.
The books?
Yeah. Can we see what you brought?
So I thought to speak a little bit about my book on birth, which was kind of huge struggle for me writing. It took me more than 10 years.
Wow.
Parallel to it, and at the same time I also gave birth to most of my kids. I have 4 children. The oldest is 20, the youngest is 6, 17 and 12 in the middle. And 10 years I tried to speak about the notion of birth in Kabbalistic literature, in Jewish myth, Midrash, also in the Bible in a way, and Hasidut, Lurianic Kabbalah, like it's many corpuses, but I call them, following my teacher Yehuda Libes, the Jewish myth, because it's kind of a core that moves. The text moves the core, and the core moves the text. One of the definition of myth is something which influences your everyday life and your rituals, and it's like a narrative, meta narrative, which presents in your existence. So I feel like there is something called the Jewish myth, speaking about birth. One of my claims in this book was that thinking in a Jewish mythical way, there is a fear of not being born. We know from Heidegger and even Plato and the whole, we can say, Western philosophy, that the main fear in life is the fear of death. We are going to our death, we are running to our death, we are struggling death, we trying to deny death, different or accept death, and but I try to suggest that starting from the Bible, and it's very strong in the Midrash, in the concept of Tzelem Elohim, the divine image, there is an idea that you can be born in your body and yet your soul is not born. So one of the aims of the book from the Jewish perspective was to look on different layers of birthing yourself and others psychologically, spiritually, and philosophically, mystically, mystical birth. And what does it mean to feel that there are parts? I think here I come to psychoanalysis, which is my other field also. Sorry. Slicha. All of us, we have some inner parts, we can say, that are not born. Dead parts because of trauma, or parts that are still in the womb in a way, and they're asking to get into life. But I feel like in the Midrash, and then in Kabbalah it become emphasized and very developed, the idea that you might be born in your body, but not yet yourself. You must know yourself. Lech lecha le'atzmecha, the Zohar says, lech lecha to Abraham, go to yourself, to your core, to explore your mission. And then in another passage in the Zohar says, lech lecha, this is the call to the soul, to get out of the infinite, in a way, perfect place, Gan Eden, Upper Eden, and then Lower Eden, Beit Avicha, the house of your father, אל הארץ אשר הרקה, into this world, which is finite and broken and corrupted and problematic world. So the soul cries, we know it from Midrash Seder Yetzirat HaVolad, the soul doesn't want to go down this struggle, yet we have to choose, in a way, this world. Although the infinite world is much more, has more temptation, in a way, to staying there, regression and being not moving. So this process and mission of become alive in all the full senses and meanings of this term, I think it's a big story in Jewish tradition, in Jewish myth, how to become alive.
How are you feeling?
I'm okay, totally okay.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about research, I'm totally okay. It's easier than, you know, doing everyday stuff. Like growing up children, this is the hardest work.
Yeah.
Although it's all connected in a way.
You're saying the real hard work is...
Yeah, I think it's also connected to what we are speaking about. You know, the... mythical, big idea of being born. It's very beautiful. It's like giving birth. Sometimes it's easier than doing, than every night caring of the baby and not sleeping. And like, we are, in a way, some of us, maybe I will speak about myself, Yetziat Mitzrayim, like those exodus, the moments of revelation. I'm dealing also a lot with the idea of Meshichiyut, redemption, and Geula. In my first book, I wrote about the mothers of the Messiah, and then I wrote about King David as the feminine Messiah. So this concept of redemption, like, we need redemption. And some of us addicted in a way to those huge movements, the big choreography. But the everyday life and the work that you should do time and again, and the feeling of time, passing time, like growing up, and being patient with yourself and others. So I feel like dealing with the myth of birth, it's also dealing with death. On the one hand, the one birth, exceptional birth, and then many little moments of birthing yourself. Through study, through chesed, attachment, grace with people, through interaction, through motherhood, fatherhood, the moments of relationship as kind of also a potential and opportunity to birth. But I just want to add something about the fear of not being born. In the Midrashic world, and I discussed few places where the feeling was that you're almost there, but something blocking your way. נוח לו שהתהפכה שלייתו על פניו ולא בא לעולם. It's better to someone who's studying Torah, for example, and not teaching to others, that the placenta will suffocate him. So it's very physical. And since I'm dealing also with gender and sexuality and the physical aspects of the Midrashic symbolization, so I ask myself, what does it mean for them, this image that you're almost, your head almost going out, Bereshit, the Rosh, the head, and then it's suffocated. So suffocating placenta. So I used a lot of psychoanalytic images and theories, because I feel like they're a creative imagination dealing with process of, they have their own language, and it's kind of a, we can say, a sect, psychoanalysis, even though after Freud all the streams are so open, and we have so many different examples of thinking. It's not monolithic, actually. Right. I also suggested in the book, which was just published in English this year, so it's called Birth in Kabbalah and Psychoanalysis. In Hebrew, it was called Chevle Enosh. Chevle Enosh in Hebrew is human ropes or throes, human throes.
I'm trying to get it to focus on it. There we go.
So human throes, actually, I called it in Hebrew.
That's it.
Anglit.
What is birth?
I think it's always something which is bigger than us. Like, this is the biggest thing that ever will happen to us, much bigger than death. It's a challenge. If I need to answer you with one word, birth is a challenge. It's like the challenging riddle and secret of our life. You can speak it through psychoanalytic, very interesting theories that we always trying to get to the source. And we never can get to the beginning of ourselves, because we are not the one who give life to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have parents, and in Kabbalah, adding to psychoanalysis, we have divine parents. Mm-hmm. We have Shechina in Kodesh Brichu, we have Chochma in Bina. So we have many parents, actually, and many sources. And each time, we resolve or see deeper something, understand the map of our existence, and then it's covered again, and then we have to go into a new search, into a new journey. So it's also dealing with what you ask. As I see knowledge, it's not something we can hold, knowledge, but it can support us. And when you study, more knowledge supports you. If it's real deep knowledge, which is building your soul and body and self. But the riddle is there. Until the end of our life, birth is our riddle. Why we are here, who we are, where are we coming from, what is our inner name, what is the name of our shadow, as we studied right. in Lurianic text. What is the story? What is the narrative and what is the anti-story? Like the chaotic kind of destruction of the narrative, because we hold narratives also kind of rigid way. Sometimes we explain to ourselves, that's what happened and that's what, why. But it's also, en mukdam u meuchar, in the soul, in the dream, in the Torah, there is no earlier and later in the Torah, in the dream, in the soul. So sometimes narratives also distract us. It's not, it doesn't help us.
The Kabbalists speak about being born every moment.
In so many ways. Ibur, Yenicha, Yenika, Mochin. The Lurianic Kabbalah, they speak about there is impregnation, being pregnant 7 months, 9, 12, and then different levels of your soul are being born. Isaac Luria and Rabbi Chaim Vital and some of those concepts they have earlier in Pardes Rimonim and Or Yakar of Cordovero, they have this idea that the levels of birth, they are attached to your spiritual growth. So there is the first level, which is very condensed and covered, and then there is yenika, suckling and nursing, the symbolic idea of accepting milk, which is also light and nourishment, divine nourishment. And then mochin, which is for me one of the most, I feel like it's also, it was very meaningful to me to explore the idea of mochin in Lurianic Kabbalah, dealing with Kabbalah and psychoanalysis and dealing with psychological aspects of birth. Because as I saw it suddenly, all of us, we are getting nourishment. Sometimes it's better, sometimes not, but from our parents, biological and spiritual. Already in the Midrash, they say about Yaakov, Esa enai el ha'arim, I will turn to the mountains, el ha'orim. Those who grew me up and gave me life. And then in the Kabbalah, they use this idea that we have atarot, we have coronations. We are receiving crowns and kind of all this idea of Kabbalah, of Tikkun as a itur, it's something which is dealing with beauty and also right.
adorn yeah.
So it's adorning the Shechina.
Yeah.
So every soul and every human being is a Ze'er Anpin, symbolic Ze'er Anpin, he got crown, but it's still outside you. It's something superficial in a way. It's out there.
Right.
So it's a light which you.
Right.
It's a present which right. you got. And the work, as I see the concept, psychological aspect of Mochin, is how you can take it inside.
Right.
Latmia, to, in a way, accept it.
Yeah. It's interesting. You're speaking about beauty, but I feel bad because you're looking at a brick wall here behind me. It's a beautiful wall, but behind you
okay.
is this flowers and this colors and the sun setting. Do you want to turn around for a second? Have a look.
I see it reflected in the mirror. So it's so beautiful. I see all this garden yeah. as a reflection. So I also think during our talk about how we see things through reflections and through malbushim, kind of clothes and material objects which reflect us the inner beauty of the world. So it's indeed a big story.
You're seeing
to see this, the world
for the Kabbalists and for the mystic, this is a reflection of the true beauty of reality. So you're seeing a reflection of the reflection, right?
נכון, אין לזה סוף. And also there is this beautiful concept of Kabbalists that each person has a twin. Also in psychoanalysis we have a lot of discussions about different streams speak about this concept of the twin. But in Kabbalah, a person can see the image, upper image of himself,
right,
standing in front of his eyes.
Right.
And this image connected also to the Tzelem, to the image, the image, Tzelem Elohim.
Right.
And also to the dark shadow. Tzel and Tzelem are connected
shadow and
in Zoharic and later Kabbalistic tradition. And as we know also from the story of Agnon HaMalbush, like all our life we are preparing this coat to wear from our deeds.
Right.
And if it's damaged, so we are damaged. But the person in his during his life, in special moments, in moments of, I would say, of birth, of spiritual birth, you can see this image. You can see it standing. You can see the reflection. You can check what is missing yet, what you should prepare. Where are you going to, actually? The Zohar says beautifully, Nasu Atzlalim, when a person dying, it's like the lower image and the upper, they become one. The shadows are going away together because there are two. So I feel like, to me, working with world of reflections, it's also to remember, you know, always I think about this. Rabbi Moshe de Leon, he calls the Sitra Achra Siba Acheret, another reason. When you agree to accept shadows inside yourself and others and reality, so you can say there is always another reason to the dark sides.
Right.
So it's also work with what you see, what you actually see. When I read a text, when I teach a text, I know always that I see only the first layer and then a deeper layer. And then when I come back to it, I see more. And it's kind of pardes, which you go into. And the pshat and the sod, it's like always coming back and forth with the to know and not to know, to hold and to release. And I feel like those texts are giving me real example how we can be flexible in different ways. On the one hand, all these Kabbalistic texts are very they're urgent texts. They want to rescue the Shekhinah. They want now to help the face of God, Hidra, Rabbi Hidra Zuta, like Rashbi going into heaven and the fire is in the house. The house is burning. Like, it's very urgent. It's something about urgency. And we are needed to God, to help divinity to recover, to repair, to go through this union of Kodesh HaBrich and Shechinteh. The human being is needed. And I always ask myself how much it's also compensation, you know, speaking about psychological aspects. Like, we are the children of the divine couple, of the Heros Gamos of these parents. And what is our place? Like, we are in charge where they are fighting and they're in a galut and they're coming back. And what the whole drama of kids involved in kind of incest also of the divine family. And also the illusion maybe of omnipotence and impotence. Like, what the Kabbalists say? The theurgic Theosophic Kabbalah, what is the claim? The claim is that every deed you do influencing God, and you can give them life or take their life.
Right.
So it can be also compensation when you live in a reality which is broken, political and sociological reality, and then you need compensation in divine world or in your symbolic imagination. I try to deal with this question in my book about King David, because David is called in the Zohar Malchut. It's not king, but it's kingdom. So what you have when you have nothing? You have kingdom. Like you have the spiritual, you can hold the inner kingdom, the symbolic. But I also appreciate a lot those texts because they insist on movement, dynamic change always, and the ask of revelation. Talk to me, God, talk to me, the Shekhinah, like don't leave me alone. We don't want to be alone. I feel like psychoanalysis is also dealing, for example, Winnicott. He has a very known article called The Ability to Be Alone. היכולת להיות לבד. And he says this paradoxical thing, how the baby learned to be alone himself, to meet himself, when the mother is holding the space for him. And then suddenly he can ignore her and be with himself. So it's always about attachment and relationship and caring, and you need someone to grow with him. So we have also a beautiful ideas quote. He speaks about self-object. It can be God, a parent, a book, a thing, someone, but you need the twin to admire him and to grow in front of him. So this idea of attachment in Kabbalah is very strong to me. And also, I think the concept of redemption, which is not... although Sholem suggested that only in Hasidism it became, instead of historical... universal redemption, the concept of psychological personal redemption, I see it in the Zohar. In many drashot, the Zohar reads the process of growth as a personal redemption. Right. So what actually they are saying? We want to be born, to become. We need this other to look at, to pray, to have our hopes. And we also need to hold to this idea of redemption, even though the world is broken and we don't have total redemption. It wouldn't be like... our wishes are not coming true most of the times. It's not, this is not the story. But yet we need to ask for a redemption. And we must say, and I think it's really strong later, for example, in... Chabad, Admor HaZaken, or in Breslov, but the ability to say we need protection and redemption from outside. Yeah. We are not sufficient to ourselves.
Right, right. You were practicing psychoanalyst?
I'm not. I'm practicing being a patient for years, supporting... profession of psychoanalysts and psychologists. I believe in this place which gives a person a moment to be with himself, with someone who protecting the environment, like the ability to being alone. And it's something with, like tefillah for me, which helped me to deal with this inner conversation that sometimes it's easier because we are rushing and running in life to put aside.
Right.
So it's a place for processing and for praying for me. And 12 years ago, after I finished my PhD and went to New York to my postdoc, I became part of the Psychoanalytic Institute in Tel Aviv for contemporary trends in psychoanalysis. And it was pleasure for me and also very exciting moments to sit with psychoanalysts, first as a student in classes and then as a teacher in the institute, to study, for example, when I wrote all those years that I wrote about birth, studying, for example, text about the journey of the soul, the process of descending into this world and struggle, or reading with them Talmudic and Midrashic and then Kabbalistic text describing how the baby is folded like tablets.
Yeah. Writing tablets.
Writing tablets. Which tabula is coming rasa. From, exactly, tabula rasa is not what we think, clean board. No, it's written and then erased board.
Right.
Because our soul knew the whole Torah and then we have these angels saying us, forget everything you studied. And there is also this image that the baby has a candle on his head and he sees through the end of the world.
Right.
In the same passage in Masachet Nida. Yeah. So he's actually a prophet, a mystic, Talmid Chacham, he's studying, he's writing, he sees everything.
He or she.
He or she, the soul, the androgenic soul. Yeah. We have it all, and then we lose it all in one moment. And it's beautiful how the Talmud say, Asatum niftach vapatuach nistam. Everything which was open is locked and the locked is open. Yeah. And all these changes, radical change of the moment of birth. So I sit in a class and I teach this text to psychoanalysts and it's amazing to see what they bring from the clinic, from the practical world, meeting with people. Or I have another memory, very sharp, studying about Nesira. This idea, which we have actually in the Midrash Bereshit Rabba, that Adam and Chava, they were created back to back and God sewing them, ממש חותך אותם, sewing with a saw, ונשרו, in order to meet face to face, from this locked state of mind of back to back. And then we study בראשית רבה, and then we read the Zohar about the שכינה, and Tiferet, those two, the male divine power and the feminine, who are born in the Hydra, and they're also sewed from each other. And they're meeting. And then we're studying a Lurianic text. And then Ramchal, who says that in the state of back-to-back, the feminine is actually subordinated, and she is dependent on the male, and she needs the Shechina, us, the human beings, we need this Nesira sewing in order to be face-to-face on the same level with the male power. So there is... Here, we have here gender aspects and we have spiritual and psychological. And the class, it was amazing to see because they brought stories about couple therapy and about moments of this work, of how it looks, this moment of being so near, but actually it's so dependent and so broken. And how the ability to meet face to face, although it's separated, and you need the courage to go into this journey. And they see it in clinic and they see it in life.
Right.
So to me, this is really precious, the discourse, the dialogue with psychoanalysts. And I feel like in a way I'm dreaming and thinking already these two languages. At least I'm dreaming sometimes in Russian and sometimes in Hebrew, sometimes in Aramaic. And... also, psychoanalysis, it's very different and it's diverse inside itself, but many times I read Kabbalistic text, I already hear the concepts that parallel or kind of searching the same area in psychoanalysis. For example, dealing with Nesira, I wrote about it later. There is beautiful concept of Meltzer, who was a student of Melanie Klein, another Jewish, very known psychoanalyst. And many of her students, Winnicott, Bion, who were mystic, and Meltzer, kind of a rabbi, a British psychoanalyst, he has this idea of combined parental figure. That you cannot enter the holy union of the parental figure, but you can achieve from them light and support and protection, just like, for example, Chokhmah and Bina, the parental train rein de lo mitparshen. The Zohar says there are two lovers or two brothers, depends how you read it, that they're never separate. Mm. So already in the Zohar, it's so beautiful psychologically. A person can live in the world, his parents can die or divorce, yet the parental figure is holy and united forever inside us. Kabbalistic parental figure and also personal. Mm-hmm. So when you took the myth of Nesira, for example, and you trying to meet it with the idea of parental figure, how you are not using it and also not utilize it as something technical, rather you accept that it's a kind of mystical riddle, but you can achieve blessing from them. So I feel like these moments of psychoanalytic understanding and Kabbalistic thought are really, they are nurturing each other.
Right, right. I see that deep, I see the deep relationship that you recognize between them in your work. And, wow, the sun is setting.
Every day. We have inside us these rituals of loss, mourning, birth. Talking about Kabbalah. Kabbalah is about acceptance. Like, you should accept
right.
the loss.
Right. Psychoanalysis is interesting. It's I haven't spent nearly as much time thinking about it and reading and working and teaching in it as you have. So from a layperson's perspective, it seems like or at least it's painted in popular conception as very cynical, as very atheistic.
What do you mean cynical?
Because like,
psychoanalysts are cynical talking about a belief in God.
I mean, going back to its roots in Freud.
Ken.
It's kind of this destruction replacement of religion. It's like very
compensation.
Yeah, everything is sex. Everything is. It's like it's very.
Yeah, but it's also very. You know, it's first of all very Freudian perspective,
right.
And it's also bad publicity of Freud.
Right, right, right.
So it's not the real psychoanalysis.
Right, right. It's gone. You're saying it's gone places since then. So maybe, I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting to encounter a new vision of psychoanalysis. In your work, and even I think even in maybe in a slightly more sophisticated reading of psychoanalysis, people.
Okay.
I'm curious how much this is true. There was a heyday where psychoanalysis was seen as the new messiah or something, and people put a lot of trust and faith in being able to uncover their complexes and being able to make the unconscious conscious, and with that they would be redeemed. And then maybe there was a feeling like that whole sort of introspection and navel gazing wasn't doing anyone much good. A bit of a complex relationship there. I very much like what you wrote here at the end of your book, and I think people often write like what they really feel at the end. It's where they can finally
what
get
they wrote. Tell That's, me because I don't remember.
Can I read these two paragraphs for you?
I would love it. Ken, toda.
But okay. Analogous to the Kabbalistic world, the world of psychoanalysis too sees the desire to redeem and be redeemed as representing the universal and primal longing that uncovers man's most profound deficiencies and existential crises. It is the motive force driving analysis. This process is based on the hope of mending and on the belief in the possibility of healing, even when a miraculous transformation is required just to bridge the gap between what is desired and what is the case in reality. Many psychoanalytic schools believe that change is possible, that reality can be alleviated, and that destructive psychological patterns can be altered. The successful course of treatment seeks to give the patient the opportunity for birth, a second birth, and redemption. The analyst encounters every fundamental point of crisis and serves as the mother seeking not to fall into the place where the actual mother stumbled. It's like a tremendously spiritual, empowered reading of psychoanalysis as a redemptive process, as part of rebirthing the human. It's a whole different like psychoanalysis than I know of.
it's also a question of trust, you know. I feel like people who trust the process and have a good opportunity of this conversation with themselves, maybe you discover that there is no cure to your pain, because the pain is always there. But you discover that you have many tools, and there is something in this search which worth the whole thing. I feel like there, when you talk about psychoanalysis, it's one thing, and what I see from therapists, it's totally different. First of all, today we spoke about research of Kabbalah and being a believer or seeker. The same happens in psychoanalytic institutes and streams. I feel like people more and more understand how serious what they are doing. They deal with souls, birth of souls. Sometimes it's not less dangerous than open the body and see the heart and trying to heal the heart. Right. Like, this is very profound process dealing with the most vulnerable and broken and regressive parts of ourselves. So, talking about responsibility and being shaliach tzibur, in a way, psychoanalysts, they're our leaders in this search for healing. There is a beautiful also idea, which I quote, I think, in the footnotes of Gennett, who speaks about this resonance of words, healing, being whole, holiness, and the search for the holiness. So more and more psychoanalysts are dealing with spiritual aspects also. It's something happen, it's a sociological process, it's a historical process. But to me also, reading Freud in a way, and Jung, and sometimes the struggles between them and their students and different school of thoughts, it's very spiritual, because they put their life, and you know, in Vienna, at the beginning of the 20th century, they called the psychoanalysis Jewish Mada Yehudi.
Jewish science.
Jewish, strange, broken science. It was not real science. Right. And Freud were accused for all those hypothetical assumptions and crazy.
Right.
We can speak about his cultural knowledge, and there are many beautiful books, Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi and others, like talking about Freud himself, what is the story with his Jewishness and why he chose Greek mythology instead of Joseph and his brothers, and what is the... Also speaking about sexuality, you know, I deal with Kabbalah. It's all about sexual union, but when you understand that the world is about upper and lower, right and left, heaven and earth, so it's all about unions, and it's about this movement of sublimation also. So in a way, Freud was very mystical.
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
Dealing with sublimation.
Certainly. There's it's interesting, because you describe the two poles of life as birth and death. And you talk about the Western
fear of
masculine
death.
Sometimes. Even fear, but sometimes even fascination or obsession with morbidity, with death.
And the feminine.
And right.
And his story and her story.
Right.
As we say.
Right.
Yeah.
And whereas the other pole of life is birth. And it seems to be that you're trying to bring a corrective where the philosophical, psychological, mystical literature is there's so much that's been written on death. And relatively less that's been written about birth. And it's you're not writing from a disembodied perspective. You're writing as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter. It must be immensely challenging to approach a field that's so dominated by a previous paradigm, and to bring into it something new, a new perspective to.
It's interesting that you're saying this, because I always feel when I'm studying, I don't know where. On the one hand, I feel very little. Like, I have huge teachers. I also, in reality, I was blessed to have huge teachers. Their knowledge, their depth, their understanding, their analysis of text. This is one side of my katnut and the fear. On the other hand, maybe because I'm a woman and I'm in this process of the other voice, like also I'm coming from Russia and I'm dealing with poetry and the secret like world and also the feminine. I feel like that what I have to say, no one will say.
Right.
It would not be perfect, but it will be my
right.
Torah
right.
and my research. So I'm sure it's influencing the way I see text. But for example, I will give you an example from the book of on birth. I started to track different images of the womb in Jewish text from different times. So in the Bible, we see very strongly that God has a womb. And we can even suggest that feminine body is imitation of the divine source. And where you see it, like sharp images in Psalms and Second Isaiah, when God gives birth to this world or to redemption, and he suffers pain, and he's screaming, and he has all those pangs of birth. Chevlei Leidan, Chevlei Geula, the pangs of birth and redemption. It's not by accident connected in Midrashic text. And the divine suffering is a huge issue in the Bible. And then in the Talmud, they say, Rabbi Yochanan and the other, they are sitting and they say, Yeite veloach minei. When the Messiah comes, I would prefer not to be there right. because of the pain, because of the face becoming green. Mm-hmm. And it's the upper face of God. Like the suffer of the birth of redemption is so painful and strong. And then I see... Suddenly it was striking also the meeting with the misogynic aspect. Description of birth in Vayikra Rabbah, Leviticus Rabbah. A whole set of drashot, homilies, dealing with disgusting images of birth and of the womb. It's like a purse that the money falling from it and only... Thanks to divine intervention and protection, the baby is not falling from the mother's body. And then it's like a prison. And God comes and turn the light on in this. Or it's a boiling bowls. Like crazy images of... And then they compare the body of the woman and the body of an animal. And of course, the body of an animal is better because... The animal is modest and the woman is going
Hori.
So it was hard to me. I remember like as a mother to see suddenly a text dealing with the image of the mother as something which is against life. Destructive power. The uterus become the source of death. And God become, and then I ask myself, what about the father, where he is in this midrash, for example. And then you open suddenly Rama Cordovero, 16th century Safed, and then he says every time in the synagogue, when you take Sefer Torah, the book of Torah from the Ark, it's actually a baby, Zer and Pin, which you take from the Bina, you're nursing it, and then you're taking it back, and you're holding it, and you're hugging. So it's so different. And again, it's an image of the womb. But it's the upper womb. So what happens there? And then for me, it also as a woman and a mother, it was so important to see the fear of the sages. Hatred. Or
hatred to what?
To the destructive aspects, what Neumann called the great mother. Mm-hmm. Like we are coming, all of us, from a feminine body, from mm-hmm. a womb. Mm-hmm. In the ancient world, it's a dark place. You don't have ultrasound. You don't know what's going on there. It's full of blood. It's scary. All those drashot in Leviticus Rabbah, it's about Ishaki Tazria veYelda Zachar. So suddenly it was so clear to me, they're dealing with their deepest fear. We came from this place, the source of life, the source of blood, and they call God, Oto Makom, this place, the source, and also the feminine organ. So it's like all this objection and temptation and fear and threat. Like I feel the dealing with those texts from the physical aspect, to me it was very important because I see that. Sometimes male readers, they don't see it. Maybe they don't hear the psychological tension and also the physical and gender tension that they are. In a way, it's hidden in the text. But I also felt, dealing with Leviticus Rabbah, that I appreciate a lot the sages that they left us those voices. Because I can hear the measure of the fear. And it's a lot. Until today we have also women. They're scared from their ability to give birth. So when I understand that birth, it's always much more than my own process. It's the most individual process and also the most universal thing. So if you can hold them both and to see it's the most beautiful moment, but also the scariest and the dark. Something is open there. And those symbols and texts, they help us to see that the great, this great myth.
How do we face that fear, the revulsion, pain, well, everything that comes in that imagery of birth and womb? How do we face that and be reborn? Because it seems like things that we naturally would want to be, I mean, we're drawn to it, but we're repelled from it. The material, the dark.
Nachon. We are taught in a way, starting with Greek philosophy, of course, Plato and Aristotle, like we taught that matter is feminine and it's objected. And the form, masculine, is glorified. So first of all, to me, Kabbalistic texts were kind of a key working with breaking the hierarchies. Because it's very physical. And it's not always the container and the contained, and they're playing games with gender, identities, and other aspects. If you ask on a more personal and psychological level, I feel like, first of all, this process of hazara, alienation, but through literature, through cultural sublimation, like we're dealing with text, it helps us to meet our deepest fears. We deal with myth. Mythical thinking is something which exists in our archetypes, in our life. So when you can read about it and explore it and learn different corridors that you meet those shadows, it's already a different kind level of discussion with the fear. Sometimes we have dark nights, and you feel this feeling that you go through a tunnel of the dark night, like the Kabbalists say, Ayelet HaShachar, like what's the dawn? It's a moment of birth of this gazelle. The snake bites her womb and she's giving birth to the new day, to new light. So sometimes you really feel like you go through some dark aspects of yourself. And I sometimes feel it's not only mine. It's from previous generation. It's from historical aspects. It goes back until Adam and Chava. Like the memory of generations go through us, and we must be the transformator, like the tool of transformation. And kind of the Zohar says beautifully, what is mekubal? Who is the mystic? Those who know how to transform the bitter to sweet, חושך לאור, the darkness into light, and waiting every night when the king unites with the gazelle. So it always goes through this tunnel.
Sometimes it seems like we're trying to run away from the darkness to get to the light. But what you indicate in this book is that we don't have to run away from the darkness. The darkness isn't, it's not evil. There's something, although it's painful, there's something there as well to be embraced and to be explored. That's the feminine in some senses.
And we should what they call the Kora, the chaotic
right,
source.
Right. We don't need to be running away from the womb, from the vaginal, from the feminine. There's we can how do we re-embrace that? How do we come back to it?
Takes me back to the beginning of our conversation, the understanding that our life never starts when we are born physically, because it's a long journey. And it never ends when we are dead, because the body goes away, but the journey of the soul continues. So for me, it's the feeling that we are part of the texture with different souls, different generations, stories, myths. You never go back to the same womb. Like this wish is lost. The lost paradise. This is, the Talmud says, "אין לך ימים טובים מאלה." There is no better days than those days in the womb. But what do you do? So first of all, you keep the memory. And you are not condemning or... This act, which I see also women doing it and men, like the separation from the feminine, the fear. What Jung and his students will call the death of the anima inside yourself. All of us has Shechina and anima, which is locked in a tower. She's like the daughter of the king, which is locked. Alma b'migdal, the
princess.
The princess in the tower, and we should rescue her. This is the journey.
Right.
Men
right.
and women.
Right.
It's our journey.
Right.
So meeting with memories of birth. This is a moment. Meeting moments of spiritual birth of others. It's a moment. We always can try to reject it or suppress it. I feel like those struggles never succeed. Like it comes back and strongly. We cannot live only in a flourishing, sparkling, beautiful, clean world. So the question is how each one of us finding way of dialoguing the darkness and the chaos within. Creativity also, you know, settled there in a way. You always have to go. Through darkness. The Zohar says very beautifully that King David, who is also the Shekhinah, when everybody runs after the white light, he runs after the black light. Butzina de kardinuta, the dark light. Eli ata shachareha. I will ask for you, I will cry for you, but it's also shachar, the dawn, which is darkness. Shachor. The dawn is a moment of growth. So in a way we use also the help of others, teachers and friends and colleagues and students and children, our relationship and love. I feel like it's always this school for meeting darkness that it's interwoven in the lighted part.
The messianic idea betrays itself in the supposition that the individual patient is worth the analyst's very considerable devotion. as also in the view sometimes openly expressed, that as a result of psychoanalytic work, a technique will be perfected that will ultimately save mankind.
Beyond.
Yeah, that's the quote that you end with.
Ken, I love this statement because Beyond, he was a mystic. He spoke about becoming O, which is actually Ansof and Keter. But what touches me the most in his life story, which was also tragic, he was a colonel and so he was a captain in the army and he fought. And then he grew up in India and all this colonial relationship. And then coming back to Great Britain, he looked for a solution for post-trauma of war. Unfortunately, we are still there. We have different kind of post-traumatic disorders, sexual and usually they are more private, and we have these colossal and huge traumas of war. And he invented the group therapy as a technique of salvation. So the salvation is not that your pain goes away. The salvation rooted in the ability to touch others and to connect and to find a way to make this discourse regarding your pain. And I feel like there is a lot of modesty in this statement because psychoanalysis wants to rescue the humankind, like Kabbalah. And even though they are disappointed, and every generation gives us new reasons to be disappointed, the hope is still there. So so it's kind of insisting on the process.
It's incredible that we still try.
Right. We want to be better. We know that we have divine soul. So
divine body.
Divine body also. So we must improve. There must be a very good reason that we came here to this world. We want to improve it.
Why did we come here? Why did we come here?
Why?
Yeah.
Each one has his own secret answer. But it was not a mistake. I'm sure it was not a mistake. Like, we are coming here to make a tikkun. The Zohar says so beautifully that when you are repairing yourself, it's not only that you help your children and brothers and sisters and friends, and you're repairing your parents and grandparents and you're repairing the sin of Adam and Chava.
Right.
Like, there is something in moving forward, actually repairing back.
Right. En muktam u'mu'achar. There's no...
Earlier and later.
No later, where it's all here, it's all present.
Nachon.
Do you have like a clear memory of maybe not being born, but of being reborn?
I deal now with dreams and diaries of Kabbalists. And every time I'm studying those texts, some of them are still in manuscripts and hard to understand them and very ambiguous in a way. Like, I don't want to ruin the beauty. Like in a dream, when you woke up, you ruin the beauty of the dream when you're trying to explain it. And the hermeneutics, like academic study, can kill the poetry and the dream and the soul and the love. And but I have a lot of memories of my own dreams. And I feel like many of my dreams are stories of reborn. I also had the opportunity to... I was born in Moscow and I grew up there until the age of 8. And then we came to Eretz Israel, to Zion. And it was, on the one hand, this collision with the myth and the prayer. Like, reality is not like a dream. Meeting the real place.
Right.
It was also disappointing in a way.
Right.
But I felt that I'm achieving a new body and soul, being here. It was really transformative movement.
It gives a whole new meaning to the psalm of B'shuv Adonai et Shevuteinu.
Hayinu kecholmin. We were like dreamers, we are dreaming now, actually.
Right now?
I think it's beautiful. Hayinu kecholmim. Like, we were as a dreamers.
Right.
But we are dreaming. Like, the Zohar would say that we are walking in the world dreaming.
Right.
Sometimes I feel it, like, suddenly I see. And the feeling that I woke up from a dream, but then there is a dream inside a dream inside a dream. Ayinu kecholmim, it's also the blessing of our life, like forgetting.
Right.
And
is that birth, waking from the dream?
It's also moments of birth. Mm. Yeah. I feel that the crucial question is whether we are very lonely in those moments or there is someone or something to help us walk through the tunnel.
You're saying that we're going to go through them anyways. The question is, how will we go through them?
We help ourselves every birth to be more sophisticated, more delicate in what we need. What is the part? Where is the leg is stuck and which finger is stuck? And like, what else is need to be protected in order to this process to go better through?
You think that we can be born again and again and every time do it better, that we can improve upon, we can iterate?
It's not a race. Although sometimes I feel like life is a race, like I'm running, I'm rushing. Sometimes it's better births and sometimes it's not the best moments of our life, but I do believe that each birth supports the next one.
Right.
They're not all at the same level. Our achievements and goals are changing. I feel also age gives us a better understanding who we are, what we want, where are we going, what is our pardes, what is the orchard. I also today know better what is the potential places of getting lost.
Right.
For me.
The pitfalls.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it also helps you.
Yeah. Do we have to die between our births?
It's unavoidable.
How do we die well?
So we are studying, for example, a Lurianic practice of Nefilat HaPaim. So you're throwing yourself and you are fainting almost, or you are crying, or you say Kiddush Shema Yisrael as if you're giving your soul, as if someone taking your soul.
Right.
So it's also about dealing with imagination and symbolization. Those texts invite us to go to very deep places of death and also to the fear of death, which all of us have. We have the fear of not being born, but also the fear of death.
What's more scary, to die or to be born?
I don't know what is the most. To me as a mother, the miracle is the ability, the memory of the ability to give life.
Mm.
But it's also mysterium tremendum, like it's the most awful moments also, the trembling moments. It's very scary to understand that you are able through your body to give life to another soul and body.
Right.
It's like crazy moments.
Right.
It's the most crazy, if you're asking about the most, the craziest moment, I think, when another body goes through your body out, and you hear the first scream, it's unbelievable. So you can imagine what does it mean to create the world and what does it mean to be divine. And, and actually those moments are also moments of death because the mother dies when she gives birth. Chazal, they call the sages Rechem Ukever. The name of the womb is also...
Tomb.
Yes, it's tomb. So it's a grave.
Right.
So it's another image.
Right. Right.
The place which is the source of life is also the source of death.
Right.
It's a strong thing.
Right.
To accept.
Right. There's that image from Waiting for Godot where the forceps over the grave. I feel like a lot of these conversations, when they're any authentic conversation, is challenging, and itself is something that's trying to be born, and there's a struggle back and forth to
different languages, worlds, images,
to try and conceive the idea, to try and develop the idea, to try and figure it out, and it's an interesting dance, and I want to thank you for joining me here in this dance to birth this conversation. And
I'm sorry if there were dark moments going through the fear of life and death and birth. And also moments of something sparkling and shining and appearing, something new appearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Some new understanding.
Right. We can't have the glimmering light without the darkness, right? The Gemara says, "What would a torch be if it was in the middle of the day?" And it's so interesting that we started during the day,
and
we
now
ended
it's
up at night.
Right? So we went through the transformation.
We did.
We took some parts of the light into the darkness.
We took Shabbat into the week. So, firstly, thank you for joining me.
Toda rabba, thank you.
My absolute pleasure. And I also truly hope that this conversation, as many of the conversations that I've had here, is not the end of friendship, but the beginning end. And I hope to be able to learn a lot from you, and both from your teaching and from your presence. And I feel very grateful to have been able to sit here with you. And I feel very grateful to the Shalom Harman Institute for hosting us to sit together here.
And thank you for the Shekhinah.
And the Shekhinah for hosting us
and
all.
And the beautiful plants.
Yes.
And thank you. Very much.
My absolute pleasure.
Kol hakavod.
Toda rabba.
Saradta oti. It was hard.
Challenging.